George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, Samuel Adams, First Chief Justice John Jay. Names synonymous with the spirit of our country, founding fathers of the USA. Over 200 years ago, they shook off the chains of tyranny from Great Britain by divine call. Citing 27 biblical violations, they wrote the Declaration of Independence with liberty and justice for all. But something happened since Jefferson called the Bible the cornerstone for American liberty, then put it in our schools as a light. Or since give me liberty or give me death, Patrick Henry said, our country was founded on the gospel of Jesus Christ. We eliminated God from the equation of American life, thus eliminating the reason this nation first began. From beyond the grave, I hear the voices of our founding fathers plead. You need God in America again. Of the 55 men who formed the Constitution, 52 were active members of their church. Founding fathers like Noah Webster, who wrote the first dictionary, could literally quote the Bible chapter and verse. James Madison said, we've staked our future and our ability to follow the Ten Commandments with all our heart. These men believed you couldn't even call yourself an American if you subvert the Word of God. In his farewell address, Washington said, you can't have national morality apart from religious principle, and it's true. Because right now we have nearly 150,000 kids carrying guns to these war zones we call public schools. In the 40s and 50s, student problems were chewing gum and talking. In the 90s, rape and murder are the trend. The only way this nation can even hope to last this decade is put God in America.
The only hope for America is Jesus. The only hope for our country is you.
Good evening, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, of course, we always welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for a few minutes because we have with us, hopefully very, very shortly, our good friend Ron Wilson. And we're going to be talking about what's happening economically. And people say, oh, gee, we're sort of tired of hearing about the economy. Well, there's just so much you don't know about what's really going on. And this is one of the great problems of modern times, is that the average American really doesn't understand economics. He doesn't understand fiat money systems. He doesn't understand what the infusion of $1 trillion in liquidity into the American economic system last year has done. And, of course, what it's going to do down the line. Because this last month we had something like the federal government had an $80 billion deficit. So that's in the money that they put out and the money that they brought in. We're talking about real deficits of $400 or $500 billion a year. You know, and $400 or $500 billion here and $400 or $500 billion there. And pretty soon you're talking about real money. We have probably witnessed the greatest stock market bubble of all time in the last few years. But of course, as bubbles go, why this one was inevitably going to rupture, and I'm afraid that it has. And now we're beginning to move down, and all you need to do is look and see what's happening to our major corporations. And many of these major corporations are facing cutbacks. They're closing their plants here. They're losing money. If you go into what many of our major corporations did this last year, you list them, and Richard Russell had published a list of what had happened. American Online was down. Their income was down 43.8%. I'm just giving you the stocks now. AT&T was down 23.6%. Cisco was down 27.4%, Citigroup down 12.3%, ECM down 40.4%, General Electric down 20.9%, Home Depot down 8.8%, Intel down 15.5%, IBM down 32.4%. Well, what did all these things tell you? Why we're in real economic problems. And we haven't even got to Enron and Tyco and Verizon and Microsoft and Oracle, and their Lucent was down some 30%. What does this tell you? Well, our stocks here in the United States are having very, very real problems. And, of course, where are we headed? Why we're headed, in my impression, into a depression. In fact, we may be headed into an inflationary depression, which is the worst of all worlds. So we're just going to just take a little moment's break here and see if we can find out what happened to Ron. And we'll be right back with you here in just a moment. All right, fine. Well, of course, now we've had Karen Lee Bixman on here a night or so ago, and she was simply talking about her impression that we were moving into a collapse of the stock market. Could this happen? Well, you have to understand that America no longer has an industrial base. In past times, when we've had recessions, America had an industrial base to fall back on. We no longer have an industrial base. That's all being shipped offshore. And certainly our steel, the only reason we have any steel industry at all is because of the fact we imposed tariffs to try to maintain that situation. And but you can't keep doing that indefinitely because of the free trade or this managed trade situation we have. Now countries throughout the world will begin retaliating against us. And we really get into terrible, terrible problems when you begin to have other countries begin to retaliate against the products that we're trying to export. Even communist China is having bank failures over there, massive unemployment, and basically the entire structure of communist China is beginning to implode. Japan is, of course, been in a recession for 10 years with interest rates sometimes 0%, sometimes 0.5%, sometimes 1%. But we really are seeing very, very real problems all throughout the Orient. As these countries are struggling to stay afloat, and of course they are cutting their own wage structure over there, anything so that they can get the price of their goods down enough so that they can send them to the United States. Because as long as the United States is buying things, then we're keeping the rest of the countries of the world afloat. Well, even here in the United States, we're having difficulty buying as much as we have in the past. And as we, of course, cut back on our purchases here in the United States because of the recession, this has a ripple effect throughout the entire world. So where is this entire scenario going to take us? Well, the next step, a logical step, will be massive inflation of our currency and the currencies of the rest of the world to keep the whole system from imploding. And of course, if you owe a debt, let's imagine that I owe you $100, and I don't really have the money to pay you. If we inflate the currency, I'll be able to pay you back $10. It may only be worth, say, 50 cents, but I can pay you back the $100 with the 50 cents, and I've actually met my obligation to you, at least legally, but certainly not morally. And so the next step we're going to be see, I believe, efforts by our Federal Reserve System and central banks all across the world to bring about massive inflation, but of course that's going to have disastrous effects on the individual, and well, we're just going to have to wait and see what happens. Well, it looks like we're not going to have our regularly scheduled guest here, and so I guess we're going to have open lines for the first hour, which occasionally we have to do, and since I have nothing prepared, I'd like to tell you the true story of what happened in Black Hawk Down. Now, if you're out there in the listening audience, why, give us a call at 464-8295 or 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 464-8295 or 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Right now, let's get into what the movie showed and then what really happened. I don't know how many of you have seen that wonderful, wonderful film, but it's really very well done, and it portrays the American effort in Somalia to capture some of Muhammad Adid's lieutenants. It was in October of 1993, and American forces had been in Somalia for almost a year at that time. They'd been put in, they'd been drawn, and put back in again just because of the total chaos that existed. And Muhammad Adid, of course, was the most powerful warlord in all of Somalia. And he controlled pretty well the area around Mogadishu. And so for somebody had given our troops, and I suspect somebody who was in on this whole incredible scam, gave our troops orders to try to capture Muhammad Adid. And then, of course, since we had no direct means of reaching him, why, we decided we were going to capture his lieutenants, and hopefully they would lead us to him. So the American military force, which was under the command of a Turkish general there, and should really have gone to the Turkish general to report that they were going to engage in a military action, but I suppose they probably didn't trust him, and they didn't trust most of the other military forces that were over there, the Pakistanis and the others. The American general there decided he was going to have an independent military action and go after Muhammad Adid's lieutenants, who were having a meeting in the Olympic Hotel in the heart of Mogadishu. So as the story evolves, and if you have a chance to see the movie, it's well worthwhile watching, you see the convoy of American soldiers moving out in a caravan. Now, basically what they're going to do is they're going to take in our helicopters, our Black Hawk helicopters, and they're going to go to the Olympic Hotel, and then they're going to have the soldiers slide down ropes, surround the hotel on all four sides. They're going to land some Delta Force people on the roof. They're going to, within a moment or two, they're going to be in the meeting room. They're going to capture Adid's lieutenants, They're going to take them down, and just about the time they get down below, while the convoy of American Humvees are going to be there, there's no heavy armor because we're not allowed to have any heavy armor there. And so they're going to have the Humvees there. They're going to push in the Adid lieutenants, take them back, and then try to get them to tell us where Muhammad Adid is. Well, of course, it's a great idea. It's a great plan. But what the American military forces don't know is that this is really an ambush. And of course, as you're watching the movie, as the column moves out of the American camp, why you see some young boys with cell phones, and they're putting in calls, and then you have people at the other end receiving the calls, and then you begin to see all of the Somali people and Somali combatants picking up their arms and picking up their sophisticated anti-tank rockets and rushing towards the area where the confrontation is going to be. And they know where it's going to be. Obviously, they're all converging on this area where the American forces are going to rope down to try to surround the Olympic Hotel to secure the area and then, of course, get the captives out. Well, of course, what happens is as the Black Hawk helicopters are there, why they're fairly low, and of course the Somalis are there, and they have anti-tank rockets, and they know exactly where to hit the helicopters. You aim it at the tail rotor, and if you hit that, you can bring the helicopter down, and that's just what they do, and they bring down one helicopter. And of course, we're no longer on the offensive, we're on the defensive. We've got to try to rescue the people in our own helicopter. And of course, although the initial part of the operation goes very, very well, we've suddenly got to change the plans totally. Well, now the convoy is able to get there, with the Black Hawk helicopter down, we've got to send the column, instead of bringing it out, we've got to send it over to try to rescue the pilots in the helicopter. And of course, then there is another copter that's hit. So we have two Black Hawk helicopters down, and of course, people in one of the helicopters died, and these are the bodies that were dragged through the streets of Mogadishu, a sign that, of course, the Somali Islams had triumphed over the Americans. And these are the pictures that you saw on television. Now, it's really a very, very graphic description of military combat, a bunch of boys who had never seen combat before. Even many of their officers and leaders weren't trained at all in combat. And so it's really one of the best war movies I've certainly ever seen, a gripping two and a half hours of action and the horror that really is war. But of course, they never tell you the true story. In other words, what you saw there was exactly what happened, but what is the rest of the story? Well, the rest of the story is simply this. This whole action was an ambush. It had all been planned ahead of time by Osama bin Laden and his lieutenant, Dr. al-Zawahiri, and they were at that time living in the Sudan under the protection of the Sudanese government. And, of course, if you follow Osama bin Laden's career, he, of course, is a very, very wealthy individual, a part of the bin Laden family, which has very, very close ties with our government. And during the Afghan war, why he moves into Afghanistan, he becomes very, very close to the CIA. Many people think he was a CIA asset. And he, of course, leads much of the Afghan group. And now, you have to understand, when we talk about Afghans, we're not necessarily talking about people who live in Afghanistan. We're talking about Arabs or other Islamic people who came to Afghanistan to fight the Soviets during the Afghan war. So the Afghans were basically people who were not Afghanistan, who came in into this holy war against the Soviet Union. And this is the way it was looked upon. This was not a regular war. This was a holy war to give a land for Allah. And this would be the beginning of creating a worldwide Islamic movement. The religion that was preached was not the traditional Muslim religion that is actually has evolved into a very peaceful religion throughout the world. It was the radical form of a die for Allah, kill the infidels, that had existed during the Crusades. And it more or less died away, and then had been reinstituted by a man named Wahhabi, and it came to be known as Wahhabism and became the religion of Saudi Arabia in the 1700s. But it remained fairly well localized there until the Afghan War. And what most Americans don't understand is that the American Central Intelligence Agency really controlled that Afghan war. In fact, it was our policies that brought about the Afghan war. And people say, well, why do you say things like that? Why do you say bad things about America? Well, I don't say bad things about America. I say bad things about the wicked people who gained control of the reins of the government of our once great Christian nation. And I'm talking about the trilateralist people like Zbigniew Brzezinski, who was picked by David Rockefeller to head the Trilateral Commission, to form the Trilateral Commission in the early 1970s. Zbigniew Brzezinski, by 1979, was the chief foreign policy advisor for Jimmy Carter. And in that capacity, as head of the NSC, National Security Council, Brzezinski talked Carter into doing one of the dumbest things he ever did. Now, Carter wasn't very smart, and he did an awful lot of dumb things, but the dumbest thing he did was to follow Brzezinski's advice, and in July of 1979, he began to fund the Mujahideen, who were Islamic holy warriors in Afghanistan. And at that time, there was a very unstable communist government in Afghanistan. They had been seized power, as so often happens there. And, of course, Zbigniew Brzezinski, and if you want to verify what I'm saying, there's a book entitled On Holy Wars by James Cooley, who's a reporter for the Christian Science Monitor. But there, James Cooley says that, and actually quotes Brzezinski on a television program, something in the late 1990s, I think it was about 1998, saying, well, I had told President Carter that if we helped the Mujahideen, the Soviets would invade Afghanistan. That was what it was all about. How are we going to draw the Soviets into a war in Afghanistan? So once we had the Soviets in war in Afghanistan, and they invaded in December of 1979, then, of course, the CIA took over the war and, of course, raised the Afghan army and brought Arabs from all over the Islamic world, and even the fighters from many of the countries in Southeast Asia. I'm talking about Indonesia and the Malay area. Muslims from there brought them to fight the Soviets. But you had to have a rallying point, and what better rallying point is there than religion? And so they began to indoctrinate them in the radical form of Wahhabism, this religion which had been isolated more in Saudi Arabia and justifiably so, because it's a terrible form of religion. It teaches you hatred. It teaches you that there's only one sure way to get into paradise, where you'll have some 50 virgins at your disposal, and that, of course, that is to die in jihad against the infidels. And, of course, the people who believe this religion are indoctrinated in the idea it's wonderful to die for Allah. It's wonderful to kill infidels. And they are schooled in this radical form of Islamic belief, which was the Islamic belief that was originally produced by Muhammad, and, of course, fortunately, it died away. But now we began to actually push this. Our CIA schooled people, and then to begin to, there were all these schools in the northern part of Pakistan against adjacent to Afghanistan. And there, of course, we financed these schools along with Saudi Arabia to indoctrinate young children in this radical form of Islam. We set up schools in Afghanistan, and we brought in textbooks. And, of course, they showed pictures of soldiers, you know, with their heads blown off. But it tells them, you know, they're wearing a bandolier of ammunition and carrying a rifle. And it's saying how wonderful it is to die for Allah, how wonderful it is to kill the infidels. Why would you do something like that? Well, the justification was that we had to get these people whipped into a frenzy so they would be willing to fight the Soviets and, of course, defeat the Soviets, which after about 10 years of bloody war, they did, and in 1989, why the war came to an end. But somewhere about the 1987 or 88, why Osama bin Laden began to organize the Afghans into something that was known as Al-Qaeda. And these were Islamic soldiers indoctrinated in this radical form of Islam. Their major quarrel was not with the United States, or necessarily even with Israel. Their major quarrel was with their own governments, for instance, if in Egypt or in Algeria or in other Islamic states, countries that did not allow representative government, and countries that where the United States was keeping a brutal and repressive government in power. And that was really what Al-Qaeda was all about initially, was to overthrow these governments and replace them with Islamic governments, as had, of course, was to be established in Afghanistan. Well, right after the Soviet war ended, the Afghan war ended, of course, there was total chaos in Afghanistan. There was no centralized authority, and the CIA pulled its influence out. It could, of course, help to establish a stable government. It did not. And within a year or two, everything was chaos, rape and murder, and everything was rampant. You couldn't travel from one part of Afghanistan to another because every area was controlled by a warlord, and if you wanted to pass through that area, you had to pay a tribute to them. Of course, everybody was armed, and it was just a totally chaotic situation. So the Pakistanis put together something called the Taliban. The word Taliban means student. And the whole idea was that of this student movement, and these were the people that we had helped to finance in this radical Islamic belief, now would be, form an army, and they would take Taliban, take Afghanistan back and establish a stable society there. And that is exactly what happened. And we began financing the Taliban about 1994, and by 1996, they'd pretty well taken over control of the country. Now, certainly they were radical as far as their Islamic beliefs were concerned, and they installed Islamic law, and of course women are mistreated under Islamic law, but then of course we knew that when we financed them, we knew that when we created them, we knew that when we backed Saudi Arabia, that has many of the same rules and regulations. You know, a woman cannot be expose any part of herself, she has to wear a veil, and of course a man can have four or five wives, and if a woman's caught in adultery, why, she's stoned to death, and there's just all sorts of but of course at least in Afghanistan they didn't do anything to the man, it was just the woman. All sorts of very, very ruthless approaches. They would have their executions every Saturday in the soccer dome, which incidentally, or the soccer field, which incidentally we built for them, the soccer stadium. And, you know, if you were convicted of a capital crime, you'd be shot in front of everybody. If you were, a woman was accused of adultery, why, she'd probably be stoned to death. Other people would be flogged. This was the Islamic rule that we financed in Afghanistan. The wicked Taliban were brought to power by the United States, and that continued right up until September of last year. And those of you who heard George Bush's speech to the nation on September 20th last year will perhaps remember his statement that the United States is the largest supplier of humanitarian aid to Afghanistan, which really meant we were the largest supplier of financial aid to the Taliban. Now, the Taliban had stopped the drug trafficking, I mean, at least in the area that they controlled, and they controlled all of Afghanistan except for a small area in the north where the Northern Alliance was. And, of course, these were people who were not Taliban. They were warlords. They wanted to control the government. They didn't like the Taliban controlling the government. And it was all a power structure. I mean, who was going to be in control? Of course, Sheikh Omar was the Muhammad Omar was the Omar I can never remember it was Omar Muhammad anyway Sheikh Omar was the leader of the Taliban, and he was really the more or less the dictator of the entire country. But at least now we had stability, we had law and order, and of course the American government working closely with UNICAL, wanted to build a pipeline across Afghanistan so we could begin to get oil out of the Caspian Sea, and it would come down to Turkmenistan. I can never remember all those various Stan countries, but I think it was Turkmenistan, through Afghanistan, through Pakistan, down, of course, into the Indian Ocean. And this was the plan. But the Taliban didn't want that because they didn't want infidels there. I mean, this was their country. This was Allah's country. This was the country that Allah had given to them. Allah had given them the victory, and they really believed that because, of course, we had told them that Allah was going to give them the victory and that this was going to be the new Islam. This was going to be the center from which Islam would spread, radical Islam. Allah's religion would spread throughout the world. Well, of course, in this situation, you have Osama bin Laden, and he returns to Saudi Arabia after the war. But he's over in Saudi Arabia, and of course, he is very unhappy because following the Gulf War, and that's an entirely different story, following the Gulf War, when we left Saddam Hussein, the wicked Saddam Hussein, in power, why, of course, then the American State Department and our leaders went to Saudi Arabia and said, why, the wicked Saddam Hussein is in power, and he really wants to take your country. Now, the only way we can protect you is if you allow us to station American troops in Saudi Arabia. And the Saudis really weren't very happy about that. But, of course, you know, when you are negotiating with a 300-pound gorilla, why, you usually give in to what they say. And, of course, we being the 300-pound gorilla, really the mightiest nation in the world at that time, the Saudis agreed to allow American troops to be stationed on Islamic soil, on the holy land of Saudi Arabia, close to the most holy sites in all of Islam, Medina and Mecca. Well, Saudi Arabia, Osama bin Laden, returning to Saudi Arabia, was very unhappy about this, and he spoke out against this sort of thing. And when you are in Saudi Arabia, they have no freedom of speech. They have no democracy. They have no representative government. They have a ruthless feudal kingdom, of which the United States has kept in power for the last 50 years. And so it was that Osama bin Laden became very unpopular there, and he was forced to leave Saudi Arabia. His Saudi Arabian citizenship was withdrawn, and of course, at that point, he went to the Sudan. And so he got to the Sudan in 1991 and 1992. And, of course, he then began working with all the radicals. Now, he also worked in conjunction with the Iranians, and this is what the American people have never been told. But, of course, the Iranians are one of the major forces over there behind all of this terrorism. And Hezbollah, which you've heard of, one of the two most radical Islamic terrorist movements, one is Hamas and the other is Hezbollah. Hezbollah is based in Iran. And the Iranians worked very closely with Osama bin Laden planning this whole Islamic terrorist movement. Now, what's the source of that information? Well, it's a book entitled Bin Laden, the Man Who Declared War Against America. And it's written by Joseph Badansky. Joseph Badansky is the director of the Congressional Task Force on Terrorism and Unconventional Warfare. He works with the Republican unit there in the House of Representatives. And he has, of course, access to all of the intelligence and CIA intelligence and FBI intelligence and NSA intelligence, and certainly is one of the world's leading experts on the Islamic terrorist movement. His book, Bin Laden, the Man Who Declared War on America, is must reading for anybody who wants to understand what's going on today. And we're going to have to take a 3-minute break, and when we get back, we'll tell you the rest of the story. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and This is the time when we have to remind you that Radio Liberty is listener supported, and if you're out there across America listening to us, why, we certainly welcome your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. We'll take them in about 5 minutes, because I really want to tell you the rest of the story of Black Hawk Down. But right now, of course, I have to remind you that Radio Liberty is listener supported, and if you're listening to our program and you believe that we have information you're not going to get from Barbara Walters, Dan Rather, or Tom Brokaw, if you believe that Radio Liberty gives you insights into the geopolitical and spiritual battle that's taking place, if you're concerned about the future of our family, of our freedom, why, we hope many of you will decide that you're going to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters. And if you do, why, of course, we can be reached at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. We are listener-supported. We're supported by people who share our dream of restoring the greatness of America. And, of course, some people belong to the Radio Liberty family of supporters. Other people of Sydney would like to get a copy of our newsletter. And if you'd like a free copy of the newsletter, why, you just give us a call at 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. That's 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927, and we'll be glad to send you a free copy of the newsletter if you haven't had it before. And, of course, we encourage you to copy our newsletter. We encourage you to go to our website at radioliberty.com, www.radioliberty.com, and pull down our newsletters, read our newsletters, understand what the foundation is, the origin of this Islamic terrorist movement that you've been told so little about in the controlled media here in the United States. We have a number of programs there. If you certainly you can pull those down. There should be close to 100 archived radio programs. They're kept there for 60 days. And then please tell other people about our radio programs, which are heard on about 30 stations across America and about 10 other outlets, and I'm talking about satellite and internet outlets. And then, of course, please encourage them to go to our website at radioliberty.com. You're giving other people information is our best means of reaching out across America with the truth that people are not going to get through regular channels. Well, we'll be back here in just a moment and I'll tell you the rest of the story, and then, of course, we'll welcome your calls at 464-8295 or 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course, here we have Osama bin Laden. He's living in the Sudan, and of course, he is working with the Iranians, and the whole idea is that they are going to plot the terrorist movement. And certainly, the Islamic attack on the World Trade Center in February of 1993 was planned by Islamic terrorists. Certainly one of the main people to coordinate this was the blind Sheikh, Omar Rahman, Sheikh Omar Rahman. But, of course, he was brought to America with the help of the American Central Intelligence Agency. Well, of course, the attack on the American forces in Saudi Arabia, pardon me, in Somalia, was planned by Osama bin Laden and Dr. Alice Bukhari. And it's all told in the book, Bin Laden, the Man Who Declared War Against America. They smuggled in the weapons. They, of course, planned the ambush. And the whole idea was that they were going to humiliate the United States and force us to withdraw from Saudi Arabia and convince the people who live in the Middle East and the Near East that Allah had given them the victory. And that whole ambush was planned. Now, you're never going to hear that. They're not going to tell you that Osama bin Laden planned that, although it's well known by anybody who's studied this. They're not going to tell you that this was planned by al-Zawahiri, because in 1995, 2 years after the Americans had been slaughtered, 18 Americans died and a number of them were wounded in the ambush, we allowed Dr. al-Zawahiri to come to the United States despite the fact that he was a convicted murderer and wanted by the Egyptian government for killing Anwar Sadat. We allowed him to come to America to raise funds to recruit terrorists, and we have the article out of the New York Times that'll cover that. And then, of course, in 1996, the following year, the Sudanese government offered to turn Osama bin Laden over to us or over to Saudi Arabia, and we refused to take him. What's wrong with this story? Is it Osama bin Laden have some friends highly placed in our government, or is this whole terrorist movement being manipulated? And, of course, the victims are the American forces in Somalia and, of course, the Americans here in the United States today. Incidentally, recently they found out, they suddenly discovered Osama bin Laden was not the mastermind behind the attack on the World Trade Center. It was somebody else. But, c'est la vie. Well, right now, of course, we have with us online Ron Wilson. Hi, Ron. How are you doing?
Fine, Dr. Stan.
Okay, sorry. We didn't get to you earlier.
Well, that's my fault. I got caught in traffic down in Atlanta, and I just got here.
Okay, fine. Well, I'm glad we got you. Anyway, Ron Wilson is with Atlantic Bullion and Coin, and of course, we started out talking a little bit about the financial situation here in our country today. I pointed out apparently they pumped something like $1 trillion in liquidity, at least according to Richard Russell, $1 trillion in liquidity into all of our very capital markets last year. Isn't this sort of getting a little risky, trying to perpetuate the bubble?
Yeah, but it certainly is. And if you look at the different indices right now, the Dow was, I don't know if this is the lowest close this year. If it's not, it's close today. It was down almost another 200 points. The NASDAQ has certainly got to be in low territory for this year. So all of these areas that which we've talked about for years that has the bubble in it, this bubble is being worked out, and it's certainly nowhere near where it's going to go. I mean, when the Nikkei for the Japanese market 10-11 years ago was at 38,000, no one ever thought it would be down around 10 or 12, which is where it labors at today. And we have a similar bubble here with our stock market, with our real estate values and other things, and there's clearly very serious problems now that are no longer as controllable by the powers that be as they have been. There's always periods of history where things seem to even get out of their grasp temporarily, and we are apparently in one of those now where the stock market, as much as they would like to perpetuate it and keep it up, it's, the market forces are much larger than any other force, and they're clearly going lower. And don't get me wrong, these guys, even if it goes lower, they're going to make money because they're going to short it while everybody else is holding on with their fingernails hoping it'll come back.
Well, of course, they keep telling us that the all the economic signs show us that the recession is over. In fact, I think it was Paul O'Neill said there never really was much of a recession, and we're told we've turned the corner, everything's going to be fine. Are they lying to us?
They're just flat lying. I mean, when you look at you try telling that to someone who lost a job making $30 an hour that there wasn't much of a recession. We've lost manufacturing jobs now at the tune never before seen in this country, and we're not through losing them. As I said in our most recent newsletter, we have structural agreements now, which is going to mandate and absolutely conclusively, we can conclusively say we're going to continue to export our high-paying manufacturing jobs abroad because of agreements like NAFTA and GATT and other things. These things are with us. They're going to stay with us. I think the most serious problem, and I've said this before, is the decline of the dollar, which is going to continue. The dollar, one day this week, lost about 2% against the euro.
In one day?
In one day. And that's just one day. It's been losing ground steadily since about February. And so the dollar is in some serious trouble. And I've said on this program and others that I'm convinced that there's a move afoot between the oil-producing nations, the Arab nations, which now are kidding themselves if anybody thinks we have an ally in the Arab world after what we've done. But you look at that situation, they're now clamoring for oil to be sold in euros, the Europeans would really welcome it because it would be a boost to their new currency. So I think the long-term implications here is the dollar is on its way out. Now, it's not going to happen overnight. It's not going to happen this summer or maybe even not even next summer. But I think now we've reached the point that the forces that be, and there's a lot of forces in this world that would love to see us on our knees. And they know the best way to do that is economically. And we're very vulnerable there, just like the Japanese were. Our banks are vulnerable. I don't care what anybody says. We have the same vulnerable areas that the Japanese have been experiencing for the last 11 or 12 years. And we have that same exposure. And it's just beginning now. We're seeing early signs of this. And the stock market, I mean, we're clearly on record about this thing now for 3 years. We've said that 3 years ago that we thought the stock market had topped out and that we would end that year lower than we began it. We did. Last year, we did the same. We've said the same thing about this year. We're well off the highs of where we started this year. I mean, tremendously off of them. And and when you look at this, we have not had multiple years of declining. In other words, starting a year and ending the year lower, we have not had multiple years, three or more, since the Great Depression era, and this is clearly going to be the third year, and I'll go so far as saying next year will be the fourth year. We're not out of this by any stretch of the imagination. We've seen exactly what you just said, a lot of creation of expansion of the money supply. We've seen a lowering of interest rates. We've seen a lot of things that are cosmetic that would give us the appearance of being okay. And when you say that that O'Neill says we're didn't have much recession, it didn't affect great numbers, but the ones that affected them permanently. Those people are not going to go back and get the kind of jobs they had prior to the slowdown. And this slowdown's not over. I don't care what they say. When you look at the declining dollar, you look at still the loss of manufacturing jobs. I mean, for goodness sakes, they're now, this week, what killed the stock market today was poor earnings reports that they say are going to come out from IBM. So, I mean, we're just not out of this. And people need to, we're seeing accounting problems continuing with other companies. What we started the year with Enrod and Global Crossing and others, that's just the tip of the iceberg. I mean, we have almost a company every week where something comes up about their accounting practices. We saw, I can't remember the company, but two or three CEOs this week were convicted for bad accounting practices. So, I mean, we're just seeing this stuff, but we have this unbelievable ability to ignore the truth in this country. And a lot of people are falling for it. But when you couple, and I've said this before, and people just don't seem to get it. When we had the Persian Gulf War 11 years ago, or 12 years ago, gold went down. And people said, well, here we are at war, and gold's going down, so it really doesn't, it's not carrying out its historical function. It absolutely was carrying it out, because the gold was telling us that wasn't a war, and it wasn't. I mean, I know we were over there and all that, but the seriousness, was it in danger of spreading? No.
And, of course, we left Saddam Hussein in power.
That's
obviously,
right.
We really weren't concerned about him.
No.
Or maybe we were simply using this whole thing for other purposes than the young men we asked to go over there and suffer and die. I would ever be allowed to understand.
That's right. But, I mean, what we're seeing now is a war that is growing. It has the potential to engulf that whole region of the world and other areas because of the reach of the Arab nations, and specifically Al-Qaeda. So, I mean, all of these things, this has great potential. And gold now is telling us that there's a serious problem. And, whether it's the Argentine, we've got so many things that's on the radar screen now. And it's very difficult to tell which one of them is the key thing. But it doesn't make any difference. Gold is flat saying, with its rise in prices, that there's problems that are going to be serious, have serious ramifications monetarily, or it wouldn't be going up. And we've had the most closes, over 300 this year so far, You got to go back to 5 years to find anything even close to this. And we've done this in five years backing up in the time, and we're only halfway through the year. Right now, gold, you know, everybody said, well, it's pulled back some. Yeah, but it's within $8 of its high, a yearly high. And that's a five-year high. And it's beginning to start back up again. If, you know, I had some people calling here earlier this week, and they said, well, you know, I wish I had bought it at 280. I said, well, I'll be honest with you, you can forget it. It's not going to be back 280 anytime soon. And I said, that time, I said, you know, at the time when it was a great, great purchase, I mean, a great deal, you couldn't give it away. Nobody wanted it. Now that it's went up, you know, $80 from its low, well, now everybody's saying, well, you know, I wonder if it's going to pull back. I got a friend out here that from Orangeburg, South Carolina, and he told me some years ago we were talking about this, and he said, Ronnie said, if you buy gold around 300, if you buy silver around 5, when silver's at $25 or $30 an ounce, it won't make any difference if you gave 484 to 494. And in the case of gold, he said, when it's at $600 or $700 an ounce, you won't remember if you gave 302 or 310. And he's right. And but we are in very different times. We're in very serious times economically. I don't think we're going to step off the edge here, but we have the potential to do that. We have a potential for real catastrophic events, although I'm not forecasting that or believe it. I think we're in a steady decline that is structurally placed now that we're not going to break out of. I think we're going to honor the agreements. We're going to stay on this course, which means a decline. We're implementing, if people, if they want to know exactly what's taking place, just read the foundations and what Roland Gaither said when he was being interviewed, and I never can remember the fellow's name.
You know, Roland Gaither was being interviewed by Norman Dodd.
That's right,
who was
Norman
the director
Dodd.
Of research for the Reese Committee.
And he said that they're operating under a presidential directive under the Ford Foundation, so to change, alter and change politically and economically the structure of the United States so that it can be comfortably merged with the Soviet Union.
Well, of course, now they're our buddies. They're our great friends.
Yes,
and we're working
right
with them. In fact, you know, we actually sent our technicians over to build their part of the space module because they didn't have any money and they didn't know how to do it. And, of course, we're providing them with all sorts of money and technology. We're not telling the American people that, but, of course, we've been doing that for the last, well, since 1920.
Right.
But you can't let the American people know that we've been financing and helping the communists ever since then because they were supposed to be the enemy.
Yep.
Well, of course, we had to have an enemy. How would you rally the people behind the government if you didn't have an enemy?
Well, that's just like the war on terrorism now. I mean, we're seeing our freedoms taken away piece by piece, this Homeland Security garbage and things that are going on. I never thought I would see the day. I mean, this gives you how American people are. They'll do anything to feel safe and secure. What in the world ever happened to individual responsibility, taking care of your family, and so forth? But we'll give up any freedom, we'll give up anything in our lives in order to feel, quote-unquote, secure.
But, of course, it should be obvious to anybody with half an ounce of intelligence, we're not really concerned about the terrorists. That's why we have not sealed our borders. That's why we're still bringing people in from terrorist countries, allow them to come to our universities to learn how to make bombs and, biological and chemical warfare agents. If we were really serious, we wouldn't continue doing that. We would actually be doing something at our airports other than searching 95-year-old ladies, we would certainly be doing some racial profiling. We would have cut off all the funding to the terrorist movement long ago.
Right.
But we're really, everything is perception. And if you can convince the American people about the terrorist threat, and of course every day we get a new announcement, oh my goodness, we just found out that in 1972 there was an outbreak of smallpox over in Russia. They released a plume of it and it got in the air, and now we've got to track down all the radioactive material because this fellow named Padilla was going to build a dirty bomb. There's never been a dirty bomb set off in the world anyplace.
No.
But of course they've said it so often, we honestly believe that it'd be possible to build one. If you had that much radioactive material wrapped around some explosive, it would kill you. You'd have too much radiation exposure.
Right. And the other thing is that this whole thing, this war on terrorism, is like the the war on poverty, the war on drugs, everything. It's nothing but another war on the American people by the American government.
Amen to that. Well, let's get your telephone number out, because I think people probably, some of the people may want to get that newsletter.
Yeah, now we just sent it out, so if you just received it, you don't have to call us. But if you'd like to have it, it won't cost you a penny. All you got to do is just call us and give us your name and address, and we'll send it out. We do this about four times a year. The most recent one is we've really had a lot of people respond to it. We deal with some of these structural things that I'm talking about. We have a lead article in the mail out that deals with the overall economy. And then we have an article that we reprinted out of the London Times that deals with the declining dollar and the rising gold prices. And then there's a real brief article from me on precious metals. So anyone listening tonight, if they have not received it, would like to have it, all they need to do is call 1-800-327-8606. That's 800-327-8606. You call that number 24 hours a day. There's a tape on it. Just give us plainly your name and address, and we'll get that thing in the mail to you Monday morning.
All right, fine. Well, you know, I've been watching these things for 40 years, and I know you've been watching just about that length of time.
Yep.
And, of course, I think that the average individual has no concept of the fact that the good times are not going to come back again.
No.
There is no possible way that you will be able to ever have, another bubble like we've witnessed, at least not during our lifetime. Of course, there have been a couple of times in past history. There was the tulip mania over in Holland, but that was a couple hundred or more years ago. There was the great match scam over in Scandinavia when somebody was going to corner the market on matches for the world. What we have witnessed here in the United States with Enron and Global Crossing and Tyco all cooking the books, and of course, rather than go after the people who were so dishonest, I mean, we're going after the auditors who probably took a little money for cooking it, but we're not going after the people who really were behind what was going on. We're always going to have a fall guy to make the people, the public, think we're really going after the key people. But when you understand that men like Kenneth Lay was the largest single financier of the president's election, the primary election, I put in a couple of million dollars there. Why, these people are above the law, and that's the great tragedy of today.
In saner days in this country, that type of information would have led to the downfall of a president. But today, it's just viewed as business as usual.
Right.
And I couldn't agree with you more on one thing you said. That line is in this newsletter. I stated in that newsletter that 4 or 5 year period in the mid-90s up to about 99, where we had 20 and 25% returns in the stock market. I mean, you could just literally take throwing a dart, pick a stock, and you were going to do 18 or 20% on it. Those days are forever gone. I mean, I couldn't agree with you more. Not in our lifetime will we ever see that again. And people, because they went through it and they made a lot of money, they just believe it's going to come back. It had never happened before the mid-90s, and it's not going to happen for a terrible long time again.
But really, what we saw was the direct result of the massive influx of money from the Federal Reserve System. And, of course, when they established this central bank, this privately owned central bank we call the Federal Reserve System, and it is privately owned, it's not a government agency.
No, that's right.
They told us we're going to put the end to boom and bust. And they intentionally created this tremendous boom in the recent years, exactly as they created in the 1920s, which led, of course, to the Great Depression.
Well, all you got to do is read. There was a lot of great stuff written about the Great Depression. I mean, Charles Lindbergh's father, after looking at the Federal Reserve System, he says, we'll now have booms and busts, and they'll be done scientifically. I mean, this guy was dead on the money. He knew exactly what this was going to do. And it was designed to whipsaw the middle class. If you're going to have a boom and you know it, then you can make a killing. Then you get the public in at the end of that boom, and you drop it. You go into a bust. They lose everything, but they lose it. Who they lose it to? The people that knew it was going to bust. So, I mean, you've got to understand that's what's going on here. And and they're whipsawing the middle class unbelievably. And you've got to really get everybody convinced, which they've done, which they did during the 90s, that this was the greatest place to be. My wife and I were talking the other night. I grew up primarily in the 60s, and was a big year. We were married in the late 60s. And I can remember my mother and father talking about how risky the stock market was. Well, there was good reason for that, because that was only 30 years, about 21 to 30 years after the Great Depression. They lived through it. They were terrified of stocks. And it took a long time to get people out of that mindset, because most people had that mindset in the 60s and 70s. But because they pumped it and ran it for 20 years, this thing is no hadn't been any ebb and flow. This market began in August of 1981, and it continued up through 2000. Now, there were some, like the 87 pullback, but it's all one big bull market, and they had to have it sustained for a number of years to get everybody in their locked mindset that this is the place to have your money. You can make fortunes in the stock market. It's exactly what you said. That's what they said in 29.
Well, you know, you can make a small fortune out of a large fortune, but unless you're on the inside, unless you know what's going to happen, why, of course, most people are going to lose. We've got Mike on the line here. Mike, I'm afraid we're out of time, but we'll be back in the next hour, and if you have something you want to say, why, you can call in and go ahead and bring it up, because I'm going to have our good friend John Leffler on. But right now, we're going to have to thank you so much, Ron, for being with us.
Sorry, I was late.
The telephone number to call is 1-800-327-8606.
Yes, sir.
God bless you.
Thank you so very much.
All
right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, fine. Well, that's Ron Wilson, and of course, we've been talking about, we're going to spend the full hour talking about the financial situation, and of course, I didn't have anything really prepared, so I hope you enjoyed the story of what happened. Well, it's not a very nice story, because our boys were ambushed there. They were left to die, and those 18 boys who died, this whole thing was a setup, and the fact that most Americans have never heard the true story of who planned that, and then asked why we didn't ever go after Osama bin Laden, why we didn't take him in 96 when we could have. Well, those are questions that need to be answered. To our friends of the Great Northwest, good night, and may the Lord be with you. We'll be with you again next Monday evening. Until then, may the Lord be with you. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, of course, we always welcome your calls from out across America, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. That's 464-8295. And out across the world, if you're listening, why, it's 831-464-8295. That's 831-464-8295. And we do have people listening in many other countries. But right now, of course, we have a very, very special guest on the line, a good personal friend, John Leffler. Hi, John. How are things going?
Good evening. Happy solstice. Longest day of the year.
I hadn't even noticed, but I guess you're right, isn't it? Well, look, we wanted to talk a little bit about some of the information that you had gotten about what's going on in Europe, and you had had a chance to talk to a gentleman who's written extensively on this, Christopher Story. In fact, several of my listeners said, hey, have you heard that John Leffler's tape? Why don't you play John Leffler's tape on your program some night? And I said, we always play John Leffler's tape. It's on here every Wednesday evening from 7 to 8. But I thought even better than playing John Leffler's tape would have you here to give us an overview, because you see, most Americans have the opinion we are the greatest country in the world. Well, we were the greatest country in the world when we were a Christian nation, and of course when our pulpits flamed with righteousness, and we truly were a God-fearing nation. But as we've turned against God, why, America started on the way down, as all nations do, and of course they get involved in wars, and this is exactly what happened to ancient Rome. Ancient Rome was doing fine until they got involved in all these foreign wars and all these foreign confrontations, and of course then they began to use wars to rally the people behind the government, and now it looks like we're going to go into this senseless war with Iraq, with a man that we kept in power. And we are still keeping him in power. I mean, anybody who thinks we're really trying to get rid of Saddam Hussein, and we may get rid of him at the end of this war, but we kept him in power all during the 1980s and financed him. In fact, I have in my files this article from it was a trial where this bank manager from a little bank somewhere down in the south who'd given Saddam Hussein a loan of $5 billion. Shortly before the Gulf War, and the judge who was trying the case on this said, how could you have done that? I mean, who told you to give Saddam Hussein the $5 billion? The bank manager, obviously afraid for his life, said, oh, I did it. It was all my idea. And the judge said, I don't believe you. Who told you? Who gave you orders to do that? And the bank manager, frightened to death, said, oh, no, it was just my idea. Well, even the judge didn't believe it was. I mean, you don't just sort of give Saddam Hussein $5 billion from your spare change in a small bank. But the truth of the matter is we financed Saddam Hussein for many years, right up until the Gulf War, and then we left him in power. And that, of course, was inexcusable. So, but, of course, now we have a justification for another war. So what's your take on what's going on, and what is the implications of what's going to happen when we do eventually go to war with Iraq? At least everything points in that direction.
It's interesting you bring that up. Jim Poplava and I were talking about all of that this afternoon. There's a very quiet arms buildup going on in the Middle East and involving our, in other words, we're building up our forces in the Middle East as well. Boeing is putting out weapons at rather record rates now at government request, and talking in terms of missiles and things that Boeing produces for them.
You're talking about what, CRS missiles and the smart bombs and all
that? Yeah, smart bombs and all of that, yeah. Right. That's going on. And it's not really being covered very heavily in the media. And you're right about the Saddam Hussein, and you're right about that banker. I mean, for Pete's sake, he didn't just wake up one morning and say, you know, I bet I could turn some money here if I just loan money to Saddam Hussein. He's obviously a front guy, and he's taking the fall for it. And that goes on all the time. The funny part, Dr. Stan, is that Americans don't believe that's how things are done in the world of big guys and stuff like that. But what I've been trying to speculate on is where the world is going. That's why we did this show with Chris Story. And it's hard getting further on down the road, because if we get entangled with Saddam Hussein, this war may not be as clean as the last war, but also we can no longer fight a war in two theaters if they break out. And so my first prediction is, as soon as we attack Saddam Hussein, China's going to move on Taiwan.
And I think that most people don't understand that under both the Democrats and the Republicans, we've been very slowly, very steadily, unilaterally disarming. In other words, this is the real plan, is to weaken our military forces till we will become impotent in the world, but so that then we can merge with this one world government. But we can't let the American people know that. And so we have to pretend that, oh, now the Republicans are really going to build up the war-fighting capacity, and there's great morale and it's in the military, and it's just not true. It's all a lie. It's all to make the American people feel better so they don't really see what's going on.
Yeah, you know, you were talking about Enron earlier on. What everybody has to realize is that all of the numbers coming out of Washington are pro forma as well. They're all bogus. Everything has been cooked. You can't rely on a single thing that the government puts out in terms of facts. You have to go to independent sources that really do the hardball counting to tell you what's happening and what's going on.
You mean like Steel and Steel and Radio Liberty?
Well, actually, we're the end deliverers. I was talking about the intelligence groups and some of the think tanks and whatever. But, you know, ultimately the public's going to hear it through people like us, because we're the only idiots who sit around all day and read this stuff. Boy, excuse me. But, you know, so I'm not sure where the Gulf War is going. The Middle East conflict is going nowhere, if you've noticed that one. And yet everybody is prepping slowly for war that they almost, I guess, feel is inevitable and has to come. So that one's going there. I'm trying to figure out what the purpose of attacking Saddam is, other than perpetuating this ongoing war that we've talked about. It's the war on terrorism right now is a very dangerous war, because it's a fuzzy war with fuzzy goals, fuzzy outcomes, fuzzy achievements, and fuzzy enemies. And that lets us do all sorts of mischief that we want to do in the name of war. You know, the whole issue over the arrest of Jose Padilla, for example, the core issue that nobody can grapple, and I'm horrified that even conservatives keep making this argument about we're at war and we have to do all these things. See, here's the deal. Jose Padilla was arrested on our soil and was spirited away. He hasn't been charged with anything. He's being held without being charged and without the due process and habeas corpus and everything else like that, on the grounds that he's a combatant of war. Well, now, for John Walker, that was easy to determine that he was a combatant. He was sort of dressed like a Taliban. He was with the Taliban. He had weapons. He was fighting on a battlefield. That one you could count. But this man was arrested on American soil. The danger is now we have this fuzzy war which is going to be ongoing for an indefinite period of time. And if someone can walk up to you and say, Stan Monteith, you're a combatant of war, and kapoof, automatically, without even being able to prove, you see, that you have to be able to prove in a court of law that you really aren't a combatant. But just by smearing that label on you, suddenly all of your rights are abrogated and you're spirited off to heaven knows where for heaven knows how long.
But you see, the beautiful thing about this is that this is a, you know, petty criminal that's in and out of prison. He's the sort of guy you just automatically don't like. And, of course, I've actually had people call in and say, you know, well, this is war. To protect us, we've got to take away the rights of these people. Well, but if they take away his rights, when will our rights be there? Now, maybe he is, a petty criminal. Maybe he converted to the Islamic faith and maybe even talked to somebody about building a dirty bomb. But you can talk about all sorts of things. Building a dirty bomb, is an entirely different thing than simply talking about it. First of all, where do you get the nuclear material? And was he entrapped? How do we know what he was talking about? Was he talking about to one of the informants or one of the people that we have planted? Because we've infiltrated the entire Islamic movement. And anybody who doesn't believe that we know everything that's going on in the Islamic movement is incredibly naive. And in fact, you only have to read the book Bin Laden, The Man Who Declared War Against America by Joseph Badansky. You'll find out we knew where he was all the time, every minute of the time. We probably know which wife he was sleeping with. We knew everything he did, everything he said, and this is going back over a decade. And you mean we had no idea what was going on? You mean we did not have all of these Islamic movements in these various Islamic cells infiltrated here in the United States? Of course we did. If we could infiltrate Pat Matriciana's office with three agents, we certainly could infiltrate these Islamic cells. But we can't let the American people know that, because if they knew that, they'd say, well, why didn't you do something to stop the 9/11 attack?
Yeah, exactly. And the funny part that has been suspicious, you know, a number of people have speculated on the uncanny resemblance between Padilla and John Doe number 2 from the Oklahoma City bombing, and the efforts of the part of the government to just quickly cover that whole thing up and shut it down. And my wife suggested one possibility as well is the other reason they might not want him in a court of law is guess what would come out under discovery during this trial.
Well, because I don't really think that this is the Padilla. Is that because I think that Padilla, pardon me, I think that John Doe, too, was one of the Iraqi Republican Guard that we brought here to the United States.
That could well be, too. That's not something that I'm, you know, that's not a, I don't have that one in cement. I guess my bottom line is how do you know someone's a terrorist until they have a chance to prove in a court of law that they are or they aren't?
We've already convicted him in the public view.
Right, that's exactly it. And if it doesn't work for his rights, it doesn't work for you and me. And why that's so hard to make people... And you know who's pushing it? It's the conservatives. I've been right all along. For 10 years I've been saying Socialist Party D and Socialist Party R. And we've heard the conservatives, and you know if you go to the Council on National Policy, it's America's God and Country and rah, 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 and zis, boom, bah. And these people now are just as happy to trample all over the Constitution as the liberals were under Clinton.
Well, you know, I got a frantic call yesterday morning from one of my friends who had just seen Jay Sekulow of the American Center for Law and Justice, you know, on television asking everybody to sign a petition to the President and to the Attorney General and to the Senate and to the House of Representatives demanding that we pass this Office of Homeland Security. And so somebody had pulled out a petition off of the ACLJ webpage, and it starts out and it said, the war on terrorism is real, and this is all in capital letters. We want you to know that we know that the war on terrorism is real, capitalized, and to protect us, you know, we've just got to have this new Office of Homeland Security, and talks about this Jose Padilla.
Right.
Jose Padilla, and you know how you know he was threatening every one of us, and we don't know these things, but this is what of the American Center for Law and Justice, which is an extension of the 700 Club, is trying to get the Americans, trying to get the Christians of America to demand we get this, because there are a lot of people back in Washington who know that this is a massive power grab and a move towards a police state in America.
Yeah, I mean, this has really been surprising to me, because we went through the 90s. Of course, the 90s were a decade of probably one of the most corrupt presidencies of the U.S. And I, you know, if he were a Republican, I would have said that too. You and I know that we don't hold too many punches here about what we see going on in political life. And I had always expected that all of these conservatives sort of understood that the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, was important. And out here, I'm watching all of them, most of the religious right, just tromping in lockstep. They're doing everything to not yell Heil Bush as he goes by. And it just surprises the bejeebers out of me, because you realize, of course, we have tended to lose, over the last 15 or 20 years, we've tended to lose much more damage done to the Bill of Rights under conservatives than under liberals. Liberals will play a lot of shenanigans with law, and as such, put in jeopardy the rule of law. They try to stretch it and torture it to whatever they can do. Conservatives lead a frontal assault. It was the conservatives that supported the use of property forfeiture for the use in the war on drugs. That's another one of these never-ending, unwinnable wars that we will continue to fight for years on end with no market success anywhere.
Well, if I could just comment for any of our listeners who don't know, that the CIA is the major drug purveyor in the world today, and we have this from so many sources of people who've worked for the CIA and people who've worked for the DEA and worked for the INS and worked for the Customs Service. I mean, we are involved in the drug war, and we created the problem, and now we're going to solve it. And if the CIA could do that and conceal that fact from the American people, what part did they play in the September 11th attack? Was this something else that they created to justify a response?
And where do you take it from there? In other words, how do you how do you inform people that this is the issue?
Well, so, if we could just get them to understand, we have so many books that that are available, and tape sets that are available, and interviews that are available, and I've talked to so many people. Everybody in the world outside of the United States knows that the Central Intelligence Agency is involved in drug smuggling. But the people in America don't know that. If we could convince them of that one fact, they would begin taking a second look at what's going on. I mean, do you know who Monica Judson Stevenson is?
No.
Well, she wrote the book Kiss the Boys Goodbye, and she's married to William Stevenson, who is, an internationally acclaimed author. And when Monica was going to write her book, and of course one of the themes of this was not only we were abandoning our boys in Vietnam, but the CIA was involved in drugs, he thought his wife was crazy. And so, of course, he's got contacts all throughout the world. One evening, somebody from MI6 came over, the British intelligence, and he, of course, at dinner table sort of scoffed and said, my crazy wife thinks that the CIA is involved in drugs. And the man from MI6 looked at him and said, you don't know the CIA is involved in drugs? Everybody knows, and I suppose it was a British accent, everybody knows the CIA is involved in drugs. And at that point, William Stevenson agreed to co-author the book with his wife, of course, very shortly after it was put out, all the copies were called back by the publisher, and the book is relatively unavailable at the present time. They did, of course, get it republished in Canada, and just accidentally, somebody shredded 10,000 copies of that book. Can you imagine that? Oh, what a terrible accident that was. Go ahead.
That's accident with a capital A.
Right, right. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the sort of thing that really goes on in America today. And the fact that Barbara Walters doesn't tell you that, well, he doesn't tell you that because she's getting paid so much money not to reveal what's going on, but to conceal what's going on from the American people.
Yeah, it's sort of funny. Did Barbara Walters tell you that 911 was coming yet? If you remember, about a month before 911, we devoted the majority of my show again to Islamic terrorism. And this is before anybody else was, you were probably talking about it, but before anybody else was talking about it, we were laying out what it would probably look like. And then that's why in the morning of 911, I paced around all day. I was upset by what had happened, but I couldn't figure out why I felt so out of sorts with the country. And then I realized what it was, Dr. Stan. I was grieved by what happened, but I wasn't shocked.
No.
Everybody else was shocked. I said, well, jeepers, I've been talking about this for 5 years, and I'm just not surprised that it's here, it's a funny thing I heard about David Dolan was talking, and he said, sooner or later, New York has to go. And I was thinking about the radical Islamic mindset, and that is they tried once on the World Trade Center, and that didn't succeed. They tried twice. They managed to bring it down. But New York was very resilient. I think they underestimated New Yorkers, and they were very resilient. They bounced back from it. The country bounced back from it to a large degree. Avi Lipkin was just here last week. It's business as usual. And the financial system. So what has to be collapsed in the Islamic mindset is not only images of terror that way, but also the financial system. And there's enough rogue trading and things going on out there right now, and rogue investors. A la George Soros, not that he's one, but I'm just saying of that same style, that they could actually buckle the system. You were talking in the last hour about the system. I don't think Americans really understand how fragile everything is right now, because we've actually played this thing out to the hilt. The Fed is in a position that it can't turn around from. If it lowers the interest rates, all sorts of the financial system collapses because they can't make a profit anymore on loans and other things like that. If they raise the rates, that will immediately start causing a contraction of the money supply, and we really will roll down into a depression or a severe recession. So they're between Scylla and Charybdis, between a rock and a hard place. They can't turn either way. At the same time, there never was a recession. The so-called recovery is being financed by more debt. And the purpose of a recession is to flush out debt from the system. It was like God's year of Jubilee in the 49th year, to flush out debt and then to allow actual financial wealth and growth. Well, that never happened. So we're sort of tracking. Robert Prechter was talking with him a couple of weeks ago, and there was we're following the typical head and shoulders pattern following immediately prior to a major depression like in 1929. And the sad part of it, Dr. Stan, is that, the American people, I was in the bank last week, and I asked the teller what she knew about a Federal Reserve note. Not a clue. This lady works in the bank, And the American people don't understand that these things don't happen by chance, but I'll tell you what will happen is in any bull market or bear market, you can make money going up or going down. All of the indicators and all of the trades are all based on ratios, and it doesn't make any difference whether it's X over Y or Y over X, as long as you play the thing in the right direction that the market is going. My prediction is when the thing implodes, number one, politicians always react late. Number two, they always react wrong to these things. They panic when reality sets in, and there will be this hue and cry, as opposed to the 30s, where everyone had a sense of personal responsibility. Now we believe government is responsible. So they'll yell, do something. Now, the people who are going to be demonized is anyone who had the foresight to see this thing coming and took some action to make some money. I mean, there will be a number of people who will make a lot of money at the expense of other people on the way down. And what we have today, and maybe this is back to the European question that you were talking about with Christorius, thanks to our government education system, everyone has been trained to think in collective mindset now. No longer do we raise individuals who cooperate. We now train people that the collective, the community, the common good, whatever term you use for it, is greater than any individual. This is a Marxist concept. But that is what is going to hold the day. And what you will see is the only source that government will be able to take then to try to offset the agony and the pain people are feeling is to begin confiscating things from the haves and redistributing them to the have-nots. And the chief targets will probably be those private investors out there who invest in those things that will make money during this inversion right now. It's going to be pretty painful, especially in California. You have a huge housing boom going on out there. And we have, too, because we're sort of a mini offshoot of California. We have California retirees settling in our part of Idaho. But that bubble is going to collapse. You're going to see, I would say, housing values will be plummeting through the value of what the mortgage is on the house. And so you will maybe own a $200,000 house. Well, let's see, it'll only be worth $125,000, but you own $200,000 on the mortgage. And this has happened before in the history of the country. That's sort of where we're headed.
Well, that's what's happened over in Japan. You know, that's
exactly
why the banks have
right.
gone. They, 10 years ago, they had, 8 of the largest banks in the world. Today, those banks' stocks are their penny stocks because they had all this money loaned out for property. And when the recession came, the property wasn't worth what they had loaned for it. And you know, they're just hundreds of billions of dollars behind.
Right, and ironically, if you're in the right position when that happens, you'll be able to buy stuff up pennies on the dollar. I forget who was the famous trader on Wall Street that made how many million dollars during the day of the crash in 1929, 10 million bucks?
I don't forget.
And boy, I wish I could remember his name. Anyway, because he was never afraid of a bull or a bear market. He understood both of them. And he simply shorted the market coming up on 1929, so yeah. When everything imploded, he walked out with like $10 million, which was a huge sum in that time.
You're not talking about Bernard Baruch.
No, not Bernard Baruch. I'm sorry, I just can't think of it right now. Maybe I'll look it up during the break.
All right.
But it doesn't make any difference which way you go. In other words, worth is very much like matter. Wealth is neither created nor destroyed. It always exists in terms of it's transferred to somebody is generally what happens.
Well, of course, in the case of something like Enron, this was not real wealth. I mean, this was simply a bloated bubble created, so that the people who owned the stock could pay their friends at Merrill Lynch and, Dean Witter or whatever else there are, to talk suckers into buying the stock. And then they, of course, got nice big bonuses for selling the stock to people and to various funds. And then, of course, the big boys bailed out and left the suckers with worthless stock.
Right. The suckers are the fodder that keep the game going.
Right.
They have to be kept in there long enough so that the big boys can get out with the money. Because if everybody got out, it would be, that would be the telltale thing. So that's sort of where it's heading. I don't panic in that situation. I always believe God takes care of us as we go. But politically, that's the situation. Bad times make for very bad decisions.
But bad times may, of course, get people thinking about what's really important. They may get people thinking about God. They may get people thinking about family. They may get people thinking about country. And, of course, why we're losing our freedom. Right now, we've got Steve calling in from Santa Cruz. Hi, Steve. How are you doing?
Good evening, Stan. I had a comment for the show. I you know, I sell motorhomes, and I've been doing that about 3 years. And when I first started selling, we had about 15 banks that we could use that would loan on motorhomes, and it was fairly easy to get people bought. And over the last couple of years, that's dwindled down to, I think we have 4 or 5 banks that we can use now, and you have to have perfect credit to get financed at all. I really think the banks sense what's going to happen.
Well, of course, and I think they know exactly what's going to happen because they don't want to be left with a $100,000 loan on a motorhome that's only worth $20,000.
Right, because it has no equity at all.
Right.
Right, and the motorhomes depreciate much faster than constructed homes, permanent homes.
Anything else, Steve?
No, I just wanted to throw that in there.
Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
By the way, we got an email, because, you know, I work with Jim Poplava on his weekly financial show.
Okay, explain who Poplava is, because a lot of I know who he is, but most of your listeners don't know.
Jim operates out of San Diego, Poplava Financial Securities. He's a financial planner, and he manages people's money portfolios for a living. And he does a program called the Financial Sense News Hour, and he tends to share the same views we are, that, listen, this thing is going to blow, but if you position things right, you'll be in good shape. But we got an interesting email a couple of weeks ago from a gentleman who sat next to a bunch of mortgage brokers down in Orange County at lunch, and he overheard them talking. One guy said, well, he just closed another deal. And he said, this guy's going to be in bankruptcy in 2 years, but I don't care. I got my $6,000 commission. And so these people are actually letting people close on houses that they know they're going to be turning in the keys in 2 years from now because they just cannot support the play and the float on the whole thing. The whole thing, like you were saying about Enron, it's a giant overdriven bubble. Look at the silver position right now. The short positions in the silver market, so people understand, when you short a position, you borrow the silver from a silver bank, you sell it into the market, and you're counting on the price going down. At some point, you're going to make money on the money that you've turned during the deal and then sell it back or return it back to the silver bank when it comes time to pay the loan. What we know now is, because of the short positions in the market, there are more short positions out there by almost magnitudes than there is real silver. And so within 12 to 24 months, you see there's both a monetary demand on silver and also a huge industrial demand for photography and electronics and medicine, things like that. The demand, because of this deficit in silver, is going to be huge in the next 24 months, creating another crisis and a literal demand for physical silver just because of the shortage. So you'll probably see silver stocks jump, especially mining stocks, as soon as people realize this. Now, what's funny, Stan, like you were talking about the big boys, is the smart money, you can already see it sliding into the market. You know, they know ahead of time something's happening, but they do it very quietly so that the little boys are not awakened to where you have this like a shark feeding frenzy of people buying. But if you walk into the silver shops around the country, you're suddenly discovering people are walking in, and the silver is drying up. I talked to the largest silver broker in the state of Idaho last week, and he said it's getting harder and harder and harder to get physical silver.
And yet the price has not, you know, it's up to 480, something, 485, but, you know, it's not this going
right
to the roof, or at least not right now.
Not right now. No, and it peaked out over, it did break through 5 2 weeks ago.
Right, and then
and that was a top. So,
but I think what happens, John, is they usually wait until everybody is really pretty well wiped out financially, and the average person will not have the money to invest and take advantage of it. And then when everybody is destitute and doesn't have any money, they run the price up, and they make out like bandits.
That's pretty much it. Or buy a property at a scream.
Right.
And wait for the market to reestablish itself and stuff like that. Yeah. Either way. But like I said, if you're positioned to do it, you can do it. However, the political nature, and this is where the sharks all come in, is if you look, Warren Buffett bought all of his silver because he anticipates something similar happening, and he's moved it out of the country. It's offshore. There's a reason for that, Dr. Stan, because he understands it can't be rated where it is, you know.
I'm sure that Warren Buffett is much smarter than either you or I will ever be. And he understands finances, and he understands that, of course, when there's a squeeze on, the government can simply say, well, you're going to have to give it to us because, after all, we have to protect the economy. It's the patriotic thing to do. And in reality, of course, what they're going to do is shuttle it off to their friends like they did when they confiscated the gold back in 1933.
Right.
Well, we're going to have to take a quick break. You got 3 minutes for a drink of water, or look up that name of that fella who made all the money when the market dropped out. We'll be right back.
We'll be back in three.
John Leffler. Well, this is Dr. Stan. This is the time when we have to remind you that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and if you're out there across America listening to us, we hope that many of you will decide you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters and help us do what we do, and that is bring the news behind the news, the story behind the story to people across America today. And of course, if you would like to contact us, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WARM. If you'd like to know more about what we believe, you can access our website at www.radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. And you'll find all sorts of archived radio programs. You'll find our newsletters. You'll find the story of the mysterious monument in Elberton, Georgia, and pictures of it, and the Ten Commandments that came from the dark side. And, of course, this is really an amazing, amazing story because nobody knows who put up the money to build that monument. And of course, point number one in the Ten Commandments that come from the dark side, maintain a population on Earth of 500 million in constant balance with nature. That means they're going to have to kill off 95% of the world's population. And then my population control agenda monograph, all sorts of great things up there. And of course, we hope that many of you will access the Radio Liberty website and tell others about it. Tell them about our radio programs as well. And hopefully many of you will decide right now you're going to commit yourself in this epic struggle to determine whether this nation or any nation conceived under God in freedom can long endure. So again, the number, if you'd like to contact us, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because America is at war. America is under siege today. Well, Dr. Stan back here. Our guest this evening is John Leffler from Steel on Steel. And, of course, our telephone number, if you'd like to call, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And if I can just suggest anything, it's get out of debt. Now, I'm not a financial consultant. I've just been watching what's going on for 40 years, and I've made an awful lot of mistakes through the years, and one thing I've learned is that times like this, when you are in debt, why, of course, you stand to lose everything, and they made it increasingly difficult to go through bankruptcy. Why? Because they know exactly what's going to happen. They just don't want you to know what's going to happen, and they don't want you to be able to go into bankruptcy so that they can keep their control over you, and you'll have to pay off all the debts. Now, one of the biggest problems we have is so much debt in America. So many Americans have gone head over heels into debt. That is not simply to buy your house. It's for everything else. And the credit card debt, and the, of course, the great corporations are in debt. A lot of our corporations will have, say, for every dollar in equity, they'll have $3 or $4 or $5 in debt. How can you have $5 in debt for every dollar of equity? You should never have more than debt than you actually have equity, and yet this is the situation. So many of our corporations find themselves in today, and believe me, a lot of those corporations are going to find out that you cannot repeal the laws of economics. John, are you back?
I am back. Sorry about that.
Oh, well, you don't be sorry about it. Are we going to be able to get to what's going on in Europe? Because, of course, my concern is that there is an organized, orchestrated effort with the help of people in key positions in our government to transfer world leadership from the United States to Europe, to have the euro replace the American dollar as the premier and reserve currency of the world, and push America into a second-class position in the world economics. What are your thoughts?
Well, that's where we're heading. By the way, the gentleman's name is Jesse Livermore.
Jesse Livermore. I don't know why I didn't remember. I never heard of Jesse Livermore.
What was it? he had a line out, so-and-so, was it before the crash he had sensed the market's overvaluation and had truly calculated its fall. He would simply profit from its decline. He had a line out at the present time of over 1 million shares, well over $100 million. It was placed months before the crash, slowly, secretly, and silently, using more than 100 different stockbrokers so no one could tell what he was doing. He shorted the market. He sold stock that he would later supply at a much lower price. He was called the Great Bear of Wall Street. And he had to have a personal bodyguard because the day that people were jumping out of windows, everybody was mad at him that he had the audacity to make money in this horrible catastrophe. So that's what you're going to see again, I'm predicting.
Well, of course, people think that the market's down and now it's building a base and going to go back up again. I think that we ain't seen nothing yet.
No, ain't seen nothing yet. There is no base being constructed. That's all myth and hype. So anyway, over to Europe. Gee, we did that. It usually takes 14 hours to fly there. Chris Story, and we had a really good show, about 90-minute program, and Chris's philosophy was interesting because we know that the European Union is forming a federalized Europe. That's been the goal ever since the days of the European Common Market. We know that's what the founders were headed towards. Now it's becoming hard for them to really conceal it all. It's being driven mostly by the German-French economic model, and the Brits are sort of begrudgingly, they're not quite sure. There's still a lot of resistance because, remember, Britain gave us the Magna Carta. And so the British, to a certain degree, I think, understand that something's wrong. They don't quite understand what's wrong, but they know the pound is threatened. And the rest of Europe, frankly, is just along for the ride. The new model is sort of a pan-German vision. And remember that by a treaty of the Élysée, France and Germany are obligated, and they do, coordinate their policies. So all of their policy relating to money in the European Union, whatever, have to be coordinated. Germany wants to see a new broadened, and it's a collective process. It's once again almost a pan-Germany, which is going to stretch from the Atlantic to the Ural Mountains. As such, they are in a new arrangement with Russia, which has a different vision. It wants to see another collective forming, and the word in Russian for collective is Soviet. And the whole European Union is functioning on this consensus Soviet process. This is what's important to understand. An entire revolution took place in the Western world, as well as here in Canada and the U.S., and there wasn't a shot fired. And that is, we have convinced everybody to think in this collective mindset, and that if the collective doesn't decide something, no one can act on it. This was the whole essence of the Soviet Union. But the Russian vision of this whole thing is a much larger union that will stretch from the Atlantic to Vladivostok on the Pacific. And that is what is pretty well driving the European politics right now into this union. And you know, it's interesting, you were talking about undermining the U.S. Of course, that rhetoric came out as early as 1992. Remember the Rio Earth Summit, when the U.S. was blamed for being the world's major polluter and that we had to transfer all of the U.S.'s wealth to other countries around the world, and we had to bring the U.S. economy down to a third world economy. So that goal among the globalists has been always a consistent and pronounced goal. You don't find Peter, Dan, and Tom telling the American public about it. There's a radical gap between the blabber that comes out of the evening tube and what's really going on at conferences and meetings and in the documents and the bills being passed in Congress and Parliament up in Canada and things of that nature.
No, because I always say that's why they're paid so much, not to reveal what's going on, but to conceal what's going on, and they do a great job of it, right along, with, of course, with their good friend Rush Limbaugh, who anybody talks about the move towards world government, they're immediately attacked, demonized, or cut off.
Right. Yeah, one of my listeners called up to Rush to try to get on to talk about the Islamic connection to Oklahoma City, and the producer wouldn't let him come on because Rush believes that it was, you know, Timothy McVeigh and Terry Nichols.
Well, Rush, I don't know what Rush believes, but Rush wants us to believe that.
Well, I don't listen to Rush because you don't learn anything by listening to Rush. It's a vast waste of time.
Oh, he is certainly, he's a great entertainer, and I will. I always enjoy whenever I have a chance to listen to him because I want to know how he is molding the attitude of so many Americans. And it really, he talks the conservative line, but when it comes to anything of any real significance as far as this organized, orchestrated effort to destroy our country and merge us into a one-world government, of course, he immediately silences anyone or demonizes them or marginalizes them or ridicules them. And that's the technique that has been used so well about anybody who talks about the move towards the New World Order and the New World Religion.
Yeah, the funny point is everybody, I mean, everybody from Gorbachev to Putin is using the word New World Order again. And yet, if I or you use it, we're wackos.
Right.
But if you notice, they never define what it means. You see, this is one of the big ambiguities. Chris Story calls it semantic deception. And that is that these terms are never defined publicly. They have warm, fuzzy sounds to them, but we never find out what they really mean. And what they are mean when they're talking about a new world order, they are literally talking about a new form of governance in the world, and it is not the type of government system that we are under right now. And so the response that you get from people is, oh, well, Americans would never let that happen. And my response is, they already have. They just don't know it.
And, of course, what they're doing is establishing local Soviets. They've taken over our local governments all across America. They run their people for school boards. They run them for city council. They have their people in the district attorney's office where the reins of law are in their hands. They get their people into the sheriff's office. And, of course, it's happening all across America, well-financed, well-coordinated, because the liberals are dedicated to their objectives and goals without ever realizing that they themselves are being manipulated by these people of great wealth who are really behind this whole socialist movement. And the conservatives, well, most of them are too busy to get registered. And if they are registered to vote, why, of course, they don't bother to vote. And so you have one group that is dedicated to power and control, and then we wonder why we're losing.
Yeah, I don't wonder anymore. I gave up wondering that one. The liberalism got hijacked after the Flower Child Movement into being what I call really neo-Marxism here. Liberals in the country have accepted virtually all 10 planks of the Communist Manifesto. And, in fact, you know, de facto, if not de jure.
But so have most conservatives.
And
I mean,
so have most conservatives, right.
We don't object to the, you know, we don't say that the income tax is a communist or Marxist scheme or that the death tax is a point number 3 or 4 of the Communist Manifesto or that the Federal Reserve System is point 5 of the Communist Manifesto or that a free public education for every child is the point 10. When was the last time you ever heard a minister get up and say, take your children out of the government schools? Because that is point 10 of the Communist Manifesto.
Right. However, James Dobson did say that you should probably get your kids out of the public school in California. He says, but there's hope for the other schools. And when I heard that, I just jumped up and yelled, no, no, no. Don't you understand that, you know, as of the latest school to work and the latest Act No Child Left Behind, all of the schools in the country are now required to march in lockstep to the drumbeat of Washington.
Right.
There is no local control of education. We are now going to nape test these kids. I call it naping our children, statutory nape. And because, well, listen, 50% of these questions on the nape test. Do you know it's a felony now if I were to tell you what one of the questions was?
I know. I mean, can you imagine anything worse than that? The nape test for our listeners out there is this federal test that is going to be given to all of our children by law, by the federal government, to make sure that the local schools are indoctrinating them in internationalism, socialism, environmentalism, sexism. And there are a couple of questions in there about general knowledge as well. But this is coming from the president who promises that he was going to return control to the local community. In fact, he personally told me that when we had an opportunity to interview him some years ago, and I asked him about OBE, and he said, oh, it's terrible, you know, and I opposed that in Texas. Of course, I knew that as governor, he had brought it in by executive order. That's
right,
why he sat right there and lied to me.
And
I just can't understand how a Christian could have sat there and lied to me. He was sitting 6 feet away from me, and everything he said to me about education was a total distortion of the truth.
Right. All you had to do was look at his record in Texas, and you would have known what he was going to do as president. So, yeah, and that's the hard part. You know, someone says, well, I'm born again, and then immediately the brain shuts off.
Well, we got an awful lot of people with shut-off brains all across America today.
Maybe we should, let's see, what would you call that? BSM. There it is. Brain, no, it's a BSO. There it is. Brain shut off. All right, I have to remember that. BSO syndrome. By the way, I just realized when you were talking about Padilla, patella is a bone, isn't it?
That's what's in the kneecap. That's what the... Okay, well, my telephone number 464-8295 or 1-888-24 Liberty. But certainly the general theme of would appear to be to transfer the power, world power, to Europe, because of course it will have a much larger citizenry than we will. It will be a coordinated government. But if, as Osama bin Laden has said, the major means of attacking America is financial, if the European currency becomes the reserve currency for the world, we are in real trouble.
We are in real trouble, especially because the majority of the... we are basically owned by foreigners, okay, our monetary system now. We have allowed that to happen here. The majority of the U.S. currency went flooding offshore to people who use these dollars, first of all, as the base for their own currencies in, say, Latin American countries and things of that nature, especially like Argentina or even Russia. Second of all, they invested in American things. Now, if the dollar, if it flips over to the euro, this would be the goal. If it flips to the euro, these people are going to start dumping dollars as fast as they can. You are going to see a tidal wave of dollars roll toward this country like a giant tsunami. We could double the money supply literally almost overnight.
But you see, the government is anticipating that. And
yes, they are.
Announced that they are going to start giving us a different currency. Oh, and of course we're going to print the different currency because of those wicked counterfeiters. And we've got to stay ahead of the counterfeiters. And if you believe that, you probably are waiting for your Enron stock to come back again. Basically, what they want is a different currency here. So if you've got $100 bills in your other countries and you want to repatriate them, you can't. That's what this is really all about. At least that's my take on it. What are your thoughts?
You mean I don't have to keep the Enron stock in the safe anymore, right? No, but see, that's what's going to happen. As a matter of fact, I just picked up something yesterday. Starting next year, we're going to have... I just stopped in. Where was it today? I gave somebody... Oh, it was Arby's. And I gave somebody, I think, a $20 bill. And she immediately took out a pen and striped it. And if it's fake currency... It comes up one color. If it's real currency, it turns another color. I said, do you do that to everything? She said, oh, everything over $10. We do that now to see if these bills are counterfeit. But the new bills next year, new $20 bills that are supposed to start coming out, will be colored.
They'll right.
be whatever. Now, bear in mind, remember, we're supposed to have a universal currency for the Americas as well. In other words, the dollar is still going to form the core currency. Regardless of what happens, it's still going to form the basis for the peso and the Canadian dollar.
But I think that the thing is that I think that the greenback, as we've known them, right now it'll be $20 and above, you know, will no longer be accepted here in the United States. So if you've got them, why, you better start realizing that there is no, they will not have any value once the colored currency has been introduced for a period of time. And I think this is all going to be protect us when, because the $100 bills all over the world and $50 bills and $1,000 bills is people are relying on the American dollar.
Right.
If the dollar collapses, the dollar is no longer the reserve currency, and they try to repatriate them, why, who are they going to repatriate them for? Because we're going to have a different currency.
Hmm. Well, talking about having the world hate us, holy cow. Remember the last time when they tried to repatriate stuff was when we slammed the gold window shut. And that was because after the Bretton Woods Agreement, we promised all of our allies that they could make the dollar the basis of their own currencies because they could trade these dollars for gold anytime they want.
It was as good as gold. Just bring them in and we'll give you gold
right.
at $35 an ounce. You can trust us. We would
right.
never, we would never go back on our word. And then came August of 1971. I
yep.
remember that date so well.
And that's because of the French and some other European countries said, pardonnez-moi, monsieur, I would like a little gold, please. They said, I want some gold. And so at first we coughed up some gold to say, see, we do have it, you know. And when it became obvious that we couldn't supply all the demand, we slammed the window shut. That's what trapped the euro dollars overseas. That's where euro dollars came from, was they were the dollars that were marooned offshore. So we're going to have now global dollars or something, I'm sure, that will float. Those dollars have to go somewhere. They can't just simply cease to exist, I don't think.
But they see, there's nothing there. They're simply banking entries, and people don't understand that almost everything is simply on paper with nothing behind it, nothing
right.
at all of value other than confidence in the integrity of the leaders of our country.
Yep. It's backed by the full faith and credit. And I always point out, I said, you need to understand that the people backing this have reneged on every major financial promise they have ever made to the American public or to the world at large. That's the full faith and credit that you're relying on.
Well, the average American can't believe that because right now things are, you know, going fairly well. But, you know, we may have a little dip down, but, of course, it's going to come back again, isn't it? And I think that we are seeing, we're living in a different world. It's about time that our listeners understood that. Get out of debt. That is the most important thing that you can possibly do. And, you know, and then, of course, your personal relationship with our Lord, I think, is really by far the most important thing. And then get out of debt would be second.
Yeah, I didn't think so because, you know, I'm always painting this exterior to me because God always promises he will take care of me as I go along. And he always has, okay, especially when I was real short of money. And that hasn't been no lack of time as we do stuff. I just simply say, well, God, we need X amount of dollars here again. And they materialize, you know, they come about. So it's not to invoke, you know, the whole thing is not to instill panic or fear. It's to say, this is what's really, 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 really happening out there so that anyone listening can make some intelligent decisions about how they're going to proceed. It's the ones who are going along, like you say, I mean, we're back to business as usual. Avi's been traveling across the country, and he said, you know, you go around, everybody's back to their vacations, and they're this, and they're that.
That's Avi Lipkin, isn't it?
Avi Lipkin, right. And he said, basically, yeah, we got this war on terrorism, but that's sort of over there still, you know. Yeah, we had the World Trade Center, we had the Pentagon, but that's like a bad plane crash. It happened, and now we're getting back to normal, and life goes on. We want to build the good life. The hard part to realize is like you and your guests were saying the last hour. I remember Malachi Martin telling me this before he died. He said he looks at his nephews, and he said it really pains him because he said, I don't know how to tell them, but they have already had the best days of their lives. You know, that they will not have the opportunities we had simply because you've had this crowd of people that has warred against it all of these time in creating this. This is what is coming about as a brand new global collective, a global Soviet, where the very same process, the Delphi technique or the consensus process, is used to run government. It is not a representative system of government. It is really what I call an oligarchic dictatorship, very much like the process was originally created by Lenin, brought over to this country by some Marxists who were fleeing Hitler's Germany, Wilhelm Wundt and others. And that's what we're faced with. That's why people say conservatives who get upset because of some land planning thing or something the EPA is doing, they go to these meetings, these town hall meetings or these hearings that where the public is going to have, quote, input. The government doesn't care a diddle about their input. The purpose of those meetings is to steer everybody towards a predetermined outcome and to isolate and radicalize those people who oppose it. And so today, remember how you were talking about conservatives and liberals are all pretty much the same? They are, because they're all involved in the same process. And so today, a person who is an enlightened person is one who goes along with the process. A moderate, just sort of like a Euroskeptic, a moderate is a person who doesn't quite agree with the process but has the good sense not to get in the way. An extremist is someone who dares to oppose what the collective is saying is the great and the good of the day.
I suppose maybe they're that group that Barbara Marks Hubbard, who was actually the Democrat nominee for one of the Democrat nominees running on the primary in 1984 for vice president, said, you know, there is a quarter of the world that will evolve to a higher consciousness. Half the world, of course, will go along, but there's a quarter of the world, a quarter of the people will not evolve to a higher consciousness. They are the, I think they suit the bad seed or decadent seed. And those are the quarter that's going to have to be eliminated. You know, that's not your job, my dear, and referring to Revelation 6:8, that's ours because we are the riders of the pale horse, death. And anybody would like to see those pages from the original manuscript, we have them, you know, and she goes into this whole long diatribe, rewrites the book of Revelation, and then, of course, uses that as a background for talking about those people who will not evolve to a higher level. I guess that's you and me, isn't it, John?
Yeah, because basically we're reactionary the old style. In education, the education elitists used to refer to teachers of that mode as being defective teachers. There's always been a move. What you have to do is you have to demonize the people who suddenly understand what's happening. And what really Now, it doesn't panic me. It distresses me at times. I talk to a lot of young people to see what's going on upstairs that have come out of the government school systems, and the answer is nothing. These people are totally moldable by the next stimulus upcoming through. They are unable to think. They are unable to think critically. They have no facts in their heads. They don't understand the basics of our society or why Republican form of government works and what the Bill of Rights is and why it's there. They've been fed a line of garbage over the last 20 years. We know from just, you know, you can go back to the Rees Commission, you can go back to some of the earlier works of the Educrats. They said their goal was to socialize the children of America into a socialist system to change the whole basis of society. And they, even in the 40s, the educators, I was just going through some of the documents today, the educators were talking about global government that was coming, that they had to use the school systems to train the children for global government. Stan, you and I both know this stuff is piled high. And yet, if I were to say that as a guest on one of the mainline shows, I'd be ridiculed out the door.
Well, that's why we have to create our own shows, our own networks. And, of course, you do that, I do that, and there are others across America, at least a few of them that are getting the truth out. And hopefully more and more are learning what's going on. I send my newsletter to a lot of radio talk show hosts, mainly because they have the ability to influence others. And that's really what it's all about. If we can influence the leaders of this country, of the opinion makers, we can begin to have an effect. And then we've got to get every child out of the government school. And if you love your kids, I say get them out. In fact, we've got a great new home schooling program available through Radio Liberty. If you'd like to know more about it, why, give us a call at we can be reached, I'm supposed to say, by calling us at 1-800-544-8927. But homeschooling is the way to go, and there are programs out there, inexpensive programs, where you can actually get the children to educate themselves. The best education you get will never be one. There's a free education from government. It will be one that is, of course, supervised by your parents, but is dedicated as it bringing up children in the way of the Lord. Well, we're just about out of time, John. Do you have any parting thoughts for our listeners tonight?
Yeah, these things, you know, history always has its comings and its goings. It has usually a momentum that is much bigger than we are. But God is much bigger than anything that happens on the face of the planet. And the most important thing is to stay focused in relationship with Him and His plan for your life. Because, as I've always said, no matter how dark times get, dark times are a great place for light to shine. It's where character is tested and endurance is developed and patience is proven. That's why we were born for a time such as this. It's not much different than a time as, say, the founding fathers of the country as well. So stand up and be counted. Act wisely, but above all, understand that no matter what happens here, God rescues everything in the end.
God bless you. Thanks so very much.
God bless.
Good night. Well, that was John Leffler, and of course, hope you enjoyed the program. We just sort of chat back and forth, and with a lot of wisdom. John is one of my favorite observers and certainly a good friend. So we want to ask you, of course, to pray for America and pray for revival. Pray for our leaders and for our ministers. But lastly, we ask you to pray for my ministry, for God's protection on my family and my staff, and on me as well, for Heads of Thorns to protect us from the difficult times that lie ahead. And so until Monday at the same time, Dr. Stan, good night, and may the Lord be with you.
Feeling well, so she couldn't make.